And ladies and gentlemen, you guessed right, it is episode 17 this week, and it's the Fabulous Threesome. We have Gareth Townsend with me.
Good evening.
And the stalwart at centre-back, David Nealon.
How's it going?
And taking up the sticks and controlling the game, you've got me, Darren Carrigan, and it's a big day for English fans because Big Sam has taken the England job, but is he the right man for the job?
I think he is a good selection. People will argue that he's a safe selection for the English team, but I think he has a lot to offer. He's an innovator for the English team. Although he doesn't really have much experience at international level, I think the Premier League experience will definitely define him as well. I mean, look at his previous history with clubs like Bolton and West Ham and Sunderland. He actually gets results from those players, and the reason why he gets those results is because he's a proper man manager, which is what Hodgson would never do. I think he is the one to shape and mould and, you know, create chemistry between the players, play his... Okay, maybe his style of play isn't the most exciting in the world, but I think it's very effective in the end.
See, I'm in the position that nobody can be an England manager, because when you're an England manager, you have to win the World Cup, you have to beat every team 4-0, you have to be the very best that you can be, and, you know, look amazing doing it with youngsters and give all the youngsters a shot and don't pick him. And nobody can be successful as an England manager to the quality of the English fans and the English media hold them to. He's just another goat up to the slaughter. I don't think bloody Pep Guardiola would be good enough for English fans and media.
See, it's just the lack of good English managers now who are willing to take on the responsibility of the English job. That's why there was only Steve Bruce being the other candidate. It's just not a very good selection of English managers out there. But I think Allardyce has a lot to offer. He got the best out of Bolton with players like Djorkaeff, JJ Okocha, Ivan Campo.
JJ Okocha was an incredible player, though.
He was, yeah, and I'm just saying that he gets the best out of those players.
He's a bang average player.
No. I'm just saying he gets the best out of those players.
I cannot think of a worse appointment than Sam Allardyce. Sam Allardyce has made his entire career on not quite being shit enough to be relegated.
I think that's very harsh. I think that's very, very harsh.
I don't understand why we have had to employ an English manager for the England team. I think both Steve Bruce and Sam Allardyce play awful football. Football that is, what, dated from the 80s? Something stupid like that. I'd much rather have seen a talented foreign manager come in than hoofball Sam Allardyce. I watched him... I've watched him play a couple of times and it's just really boring.
You can argue it's the style of football that people want to see, but it's all about the result at the end of the day, and he gets results.
The only reason Sunderland stayed up is because Norwich capitulated and imploded at the end of the season. That's the only reason he kept Sunderland up, because Norwich weren't good enough. That's why, not because of anything Sunderland did, because Norwich were not good enough at the end of the season.
You could say the same about Newcastle. You could say the same about Villa. I'm just saying that he got... I'm just saying Allardyce got Sunderland from nothing to something in the end of the season. They look really, really strong.
By not being quite shit enough to be relegated. I would much rather have gone for somebody with international experience. Jurgen Klinsmann was spoken about. He would have been a lot better than Allardyce. Look at what he's done for the USA since he's been there. He's taken them from being sort of like, an outsider and way behind Mexico in terms of football, and now partly because of the success of the national team. The MLS is getting bigger. They're now challenging Mexico. They got to the semi-final of the Copa America. Klinsmann, and he also played a big role in the resurgence of Germany. When they were terrible, Klinsmann went in and laid the groundwork for the German team that's now prospering today. I think he would have been a much better appointment. Marcelo Bielsa was also available. And if you look at the success that Chile have had over the last 2 years, who was the manager that kickstarted all of that success? That was Marcelo Bielsa. Two people available with very good international pedigrees at starting a turnaround in a team to then make them a much better team challenging the top teams in the world. And I don't think Allardyce will do that. I think them other two will have done.
I'm just saying that Klinsmann, he's way out of his depth playing for the English team. I don't think you can compare USA to England on any scale.
You could compare Germany to England, though.
I don't think he did a great job at Germany, to be honest.
He started it all off. He was the person who went in there and laid the groundwork for what Germany is succeeding from now. And I'm not comparing USA to England. What I'm saying is that he went in there to a team that had nothing. They had nothing going for them. They had Tim Howard and Landon Donovan, and that was pretty much it. And then he's made them to the point where they could compete with Mexico, who are one of the top sides in North and South America. They got to the semi-final of the Copa America. Yes, Brazil had a bad tournament, but to only be bettered by Chile and Argentina, you know, in terms of two teams that are better than them in that tournament, says a lot. And I'd much rather have had that person than Sam Allardyce, just launch it long to Andy Carroll, who's going to be Jermaine Defoe. What a really great partnership that is for England.
Okay, and in my opinion, Klinsmann would have been the best man for the job. That's just my taste. I think he's a brilliant manager, but then again, I'd back him for any kind of job right now, and I think he's a great manager.
Yeah, I just think he's got the experience of building something that from a team that aren't very good, and England aren't very good. We've got the building blocks there, and I think Klinsmann could have come in and used them and built something that can compete.
I'm just saying Allardyce would have done the exact same thing. You're debating on not having one training session with the England team, not one match played with the England team, but he is a man manager and he will get the best out of those players, just can like I, Klinsmann would.
The thing is,
can I finish my sentence?
I thought you finished it, but I'm just
I got to say about Klinsmann, but I was going to say, but I think Allardyce is a good manager as well. I think he's a great manager who can bring a structure. It's one philosophy, fair enough, but part of the problem with England is they've never had a cohesive structure about them. They've not had one plan, they've not had a system, they've not had a tactic, they've not known what they're doing in the team.
So pretty much Hodgson's philosophy.
Yeah, like that's the problem. Every manager they've brought in has changed everything every single game, whereas Sam Allardyce is going to have a plan the minute he gets in there.
See, that's the issue.
The thing is, international management, you've got a week at a time with your players. It's not like he can go in at Sunderland or Bolton or Blackburn and he's got 9 months or whatever to build a philosophy with seeing his players every single day. I think for someone that's a real man manager needs more than just a week at a time with his players.
But see, if you do that with Bielsa and you play kind of a philosophy that's kind of unfamiliar to the England team, you're just going to go pretty much all over the place. I think Bielsa's philosophy is too complicated for the England team.
But then if you look at a lot of the top sides in England now, how many of them are playing long ball football? That is what Sam Allardyce is going to play. He's going to play a direct style of football. If you look at Man United, Chelsea, Man City, how many of them play direct football? None of them.
I'm just saying direct football can work on some kind of levels. I think it will work well with the England team.
It can work.
See, if you play possession... I mean, it's going back to England's Euro 2016 campaign, playing possession football and having no end product. That was pretty much it.
But if you look at the good technical strikers in the England team, how many of them suit long ball football?
I'm just saying, Jamie Vardy, he's a defensive forward and he can get long. He has pace to burn and he will certainly be able to do that.
Jamie Vardy, Wayne Rooney, depending on who you take, never play him as a starting 11, but good from the bench to four. A lot of players who are your kind of bench level players are great at long ball football, and I think Rooney and Jamie Vardy are good enough to be your starting for long ball football, as much as I don't like Rooney as a player anymore.
But then you've got the players like Sturridge and Kane, who I would say are better than Jamie Vardy.
Yep, play them behind Jamie Vardy then. Play one on the shoulder and one dropping deep into the gap.
But then does that suit long ball football?
Yeah, Jamie Vardy wins the ball, plays it back to Harry Kane, who's in the gap. And then you've got...
That's precisely it.
Yeah.
But why would Vardy be winning the ball? He's not playing as a target man. He'll be on the shoulder of the last
defender. No, but he likes to make the runs.
Exactly, and then once he's got the ball or controlled it, he'll either go for a shot himself, and if he can't get a shot himself, that's where he plays it back to his partner.
Well, there is one positive I can think of Sam Allardyce, and that's at least we won't get beaten up by the Russians in 2018 because we won't beat them. That's the only positive I can think of.
But speaking of bad decisions, Steve Bruce.
I feel harsh for Bruce because if you're going to fall out, it's like going back to Tony Pulis at Crystal Palace and you're having... You need money pumped in when you're back into the Premier League. And the owners are just doing nothing about it. You have 13 outfield players. And
He has fit players.
13 fit players. All I'm saying is you need more players. You need more money. You need financial support. And that's what Bruce was lacking from the owners. And the owners have put a transfer embargo upon because they're selling the club in September. It's just... I would probably leave that position if I were in that situation where you had no financial backing, no support. It's just, in the Premier League, you're bouncing back into the Premier League and you need to spend to stay up. Hull are one of those yo-yo teams who just keep going up and down because they have no financial support. And it's down to the owners at the end of the day. And I think they're very foolish because I think Steve Bruce has done a great job at Hull. But yeah, I think this
in first place.
Yeah, but they managed to bounce back up, and that's where you need it. The Championship is a hard league to get out of, and he's done very well to do that. But I'm just saying, he's been loyal, and this was just the final straw for him.
I wouldn't surprise me if he goes and is Allardyce's number two at England, because he was interviewed for that job. It wouldn't surprise me if they give him a sort of like a number two role in the England squad.
Hmm. Well,
but yeah, I agree with you, David.
It's just very, very. I just feel bad for the fans because you're paying tickets, you're paying season tickets, and you're getting nothing out of them. Basically, where's the money going to?
I had an Oldham season ticket, and at one point we had no manager and four first team players. So,
it's just a sad day. I think Hull will definitely go down, as much as it pains me to say it. I think they were going to go down anyway, but I think this will just put the nail in the coffin for them. Especially since I have no... it's going to be hard for somebody to be convinced to take over Hull in that sort of situation. It's kind of like Blackpool in the Championship when you had very little players, very little money. And now you're going to be condemned to League Two football.
But then it's a win-win situation in a way, isn't it? Taking over that job. If you do it and you keep them up, then you've worked some sort of miracle. If you go down, then it's not your fault. You didn't have any players.
You know
you have to wait. Go on.
You know who likes lost causes? Alan McCoist. Or Ronnie Dyla.
Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, Sam Allardyce, the whole confirmed.
That's a cheap shot. How do you actually feel about Moyes taking over Sunderland now?
No, I don't care.
He's not going to Celtic. I'm happy.
I hope he does well.
Do you know what? I think he will keep them up. I think he will keep them up. I think he'll do a good job at Sunderland. I think he'll find his level.
I hope he does, because of the amount of piss it would boil with Newcastle fans if he keeps them up. and because taking over from Sir Alex at United was the impossible job in football. Nobody was going to be successful, regardless of who they picked. So, yeah, I hope he does do well.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty much our topics covered.
So, let's run on to Man of the Match, and I'll just go with the easy one, because, yeah, Lars Bentner.
Bender. He's not Danish.
Whatever, that guy. German centre midfielder.
Did you sign his brother Sven?
No, I didn't. He's playing as a box-to-box midfielder for me, and I think he's bagged 3 goals in the opening 5 games.
A box-to-box?
Mm-hmm.
That surprises me, because he's very much a defensive midfielder.
Yep, and he...
I would have put him as a ball-winning midfielder.
I think I would have done.
The way that I've laid out my team is a 4-4-2 diamond, and got a ball-winning defensive midfielder, and then 2 box-to-boxes in the centre. But every one of my midfielders has the capacity to be a defensive midfielder, so I'm really just wanting to dominate the centre.
The benefit of 2 box-to-box midfielders.
I was going to say, I wouldn't play 2 people the same role in central midfield.
It's very effective for a control football.
I'm playing, at the moment, a ball-winning midfielder and an attacking central midfielder.
You need some kind of playmaker in that situation.
My attacking midfield centre is an advanced playmaker.
I would go with either just a central midfielder and deep-line playmaker, depending on the kind of player that I have, which I'll talk about in my Man of the Match.
See the formation I'm going for. It's control, and it's got look for the overlap on, and my playmaker's my attacking midfield centre. So what happens usually is, if the ball's in the centre, my 2 box-to-boxes pass by the advanced playmaker, the ball goes to either the left or right back, then an early cross comes in to the target man, who'll either lay it back to one of my box-to-box or the striker, or score for the header.
Are you not really exposed on the counter on the wings then?
No, actually.
If you've got no wingers and your fullbacks are getting forward, have you played any of the big teams in Germany yet?
I have played Schalke and Hamburg. I've not played Dortmund.
Hamburg aren't a big team in Germany anymore.
They're predicted to finish third, believe it or not.
Really? They had a really bad season in the Bundesliga last year. I don't know. I think against teams like maybe Dortmund and Bayern, you might struggle a bit with them just getting you.
I might not be playing this formation against Bayern and Dortmund. I might be just going a flat 4-4-2 for that.
Fair enough, I guess.
I'm only 5 games in, and this is a great... See, because it's Lars Bentner and Kempel? Is that how you pronounce it?
Kevin Campbell.
Campbell, yeah.
Yeah, they've proved that they've got the stamina to be back in a part of every defence. Like, when I was testing out the strategy, I was kind of prepared to tweak it, but I've had no reason to. It's been working perfectly.
Nice.
Except with all my injuries now. Lars Bentner, Wendell, Chicharito, one of my signings, target man, I think his name's Levonsk or something like that, and Tim Jedvaj are all injured from my last match.
Oh, your pronunciation offends my ears.
Did I give a shit?
I mean, we never really took English in class, did we? Or German?
Oh, I did, which is why it hurts.
Fucking Nazi sympathiser.
Yep, that's it. For the record, I'm not a Nazi sympathiser.
Well, Dirk's not here, so somebody has to be.
Okay, well, I guess I'll fill that role then.
Okay, before we start.
Yeah, I think we should move on.
I'll jump in with my Man of the Match. I've started the save with Copenhagen, and the left back we've got is Ludvig Augustinsson. And I'm playing him as an attacking fullback on the left, and he's done really, really, really well for us. In 15 Superliga matches, he's got 9 assists, 18 key dribbles, and his passing percentage is 76%, and he's made 66 tackles in the league. So he's a big threat going forward. His crossing is 15, so he's a real threat putting crosses into the box towards my target man, who I'm changing now to a deep line forward, because then he's sort of knocking balls down to a poacher because the target man wasn't quite working. But he's a threat going forward and really, really solid at the back. His average in the league is 7.56. He's the third highest rated average player in the league total. So he's played really, really well. It was quite difficult because there's quite a few of my players who are playing quite well. The only people that aren't really are my strikers, who I'm struggling to get to score, which is a shame because one of them I spent a club record €8 million on. So that's a...
Do you feel that the club could be lumbered with a flop for a number of years with this contract, Gareth?
I wouldn't say he's a flop. He's got 5 in 14, so it's not great, but it could be a lot worse. I just think that maybe he's not... He's a defensive forward, is what he's best at, and I don't really know how to get the best out of a defensive forward. I've read about it, and I think that's the Jamie Vardy role. Jamie Vardy's a defensive forward, puts a lot of pressure on the defence and generally tries to defend from the front.
You just need someone who's very pacey, that's basically it.
Yeah, it's difficult to get like quality... I haven't got a quality strike partner. We've got an abundance of target men, but I don't like using them. So I think I'm going to try and ship out Federico Santander and Andreas Cornelius in January and possibly bring in another striker.
I'd hang on to Cornelius, to be honest.
You'd keep hold of him?
I would, yeah. He's a good player. Sometimes he turns out to be very, very good. So good that he signs for Barcelona.
Barcelona are weird in FM with their signings, though.
They signed Sadio Mane on, by the way.
It's either Barcelona or PSG, one of them that usually sign quite odd numbers, odd names. Anyways.
Yep, on you.
Yeah, this is my final player from Flora Tallinn since I've just left them, which is a bit of a spoiler, but... Oleksiy Lazebny is my man of the match this week. He's Ukrainian. He's filling in the deep line playmaker role. Technically stellar. He scored an absolutely worldly of a free kick, which I'll talk to you about later. Mentally, he's pretty good, and physically, he's not the best. I mean, looking at his strength and his acceleration of pace, he's not really the kind of player who will move around very often. But he likes to play from deep. Despite him not getting too many assists, he gets in a lot of good challenges. And he's been one of those players who's been getting consistently decent average ratings for me. He got an average rating of 7.31 throughout the course of the season. And yeah, he's really decent for me. That's pretty much all I can say about him.
Huh. Well, David, keep on going then.
So Save Scout... I've actually come across a few different groups related to Football Manager on Facebook. And this guy in particular was doing what they call a double heptagon challenge, where it's pretty much the same as your hexagon, where you win all the Champions Leagues in each continent. But in this instance, you actually have to win the... basically, you have to win the Champions Leagues and the World's Club Championship to complete the first heptagon. And then the second heptagon is with international management. And you have to win the African Cup of Nations, the Asian Cup, the Gold Cup in North America, Copa America, the Euros, and the Oceanic Cup, I'm guessing, and the World Cup. And this guy is already into... I think he's in the year 2045, and he's only got 3 trophies left to complete. He's having a really good career, and I think I might follow that save. Very interesting challenge.
Yeah, I've sort of thought about that sort of thing before, but just never got around to doing it. But I just never named it the double Heptagon challenge.
I think there's another name for it, but
yeah,
it's quite long.
There's quite a lot of them, isn't there? Quite a lot of sort of different takes on the pentagon.
I think a double heptagon sums it up very well.
Yeah.
Well, my safe scout is my new save, which is just a simple Leverkusen save, because I've always wanted to manage in the Bundesliga, and with my current frustrations, thought now was a good time to get it started.
Sorry, say that team again.
What one?
Don't. Let me take my headphones off first.
Leverkusen, not Leverkusen.
There's one R.
Say that again.
Leverkusen.
Is that like Bayer Leverkusen? Oh,
yes. Well, if you want to just call them after a German car dealership, then that, all right.
Yep. Well, Gaz, you should have never told us that our pronunciation annoys you.
I'll start pronouncing Celtic, Celtic then or something.
Yeah, sure. Whatever floats your boat.
Celtic would have worked better.
That'd irritate me as well.
Yeah, like, you say this as a pronunciation is some kind of, like, Achilles heel for me? No. My girlfriend is dyslexic. but yeah, pretty much, I'm going to try and play some possession football, and my objective really is just to either get second or first, and then from there I'll probably move on from it, like get a new job and that save. So far I've just kind of sold a lot of the kind of rotation players that I don't think I'll need, like rotational wingers and stuff like that, when I'm trying to play a fairly narrow system. So, yep. And immediately I was punished for my hubris by injuries in the fourth game of the season.
So what happens when you don't pronounce the team properly?
No, it's not. David, or Gaz, who wants to start with the headliner, actually?
I'll go ahead then.
Fake.
Yeah, my headliner this week was the absolute whirly of a free kick that Lezebny scored to secure us the league title. We had two games remaining in the league, and we were only, I think, 4 points clear. So it was a must-win game against Paide Linnemiskond, who were eighth in the league. And Lezebny just struck a free kick from 30 yards out, right into the top corner of the net. An absolutely brilliant finish, and it's helped us secure the title because we needed 3 points from our last two, which was exactly what we did. Otherwise, it would have set up a match against Lavadia Tallinn in the final game of the season, who were, I think they were 4 points behind me. So if I had slipped up, it would have gone down to the last game of the season. But Lezebny was the hero, and he gave us the title.
It's always good when you score like a ridiculous goal as a last minute.
I think that was just one of those moments that really deserved you the title.
Yeah, it's whenever you're desperate, it never seems to be a tap in. It always seems to be an absolute world. The Bayern Munich game I had and my Celtic save, where the 3-1 with Bayern beating me 3-1. I went through an away goals because of that one goal. It came in the 93rd minute by Harry Chapman scoring from 28 yards, like just out of nowhere. It never comes as a tap-in when it's a last-minute goal in FM. Loves to make it dramatic.
Oh, Paddy McNair's Champions League winner for Newcastle United was a really, really scrappy corner that was tapped in from off the line. So they do come. They always come in a situation where you are unable to lose your mind because you've got to, for some reason, be a little bit quiet.
Yeah, I'll say that whenever you get a last-minute goal in FM, it's always like midnight or 3 a.m, or you're in class. Or it's like the only two times I've ever seen, well, two times now, but the only two times I've ever heard of a last-minute not being an amazing goal is Chris and his Burnley, and that story you've just told me there.
King Paddy,
and who was it? Was it Hoof for Chris that scored?
I don't know. But Ryan Shotton was my other monstrous centre back. But I don't know about Chris.
But you can go next.
Okay, so I was playing a first division side, Lyngby, in the fourth round of the Danish Cup, and we went 2-0 down after a quarter of an hour, which was pretty dire. I was in my process of trying to create a direct style of play, and it wasn't really going very well. So I switched it up around 20 minutes to try and keep the ball and play a more patient possession-based style of game. And then Cornelius got goals in the 24th and 45th minute. Kasper Kusk, who was on the borderline of being my player of the week, got goals in the 33rd and 67th minute. And Mikael Antonsen scored in the 74th. So we ended up winning the game 5-2 after I stopped trying to play direct football and started trying to play possession football away from home in the cup. So coming from 2-0 down after a quarter of an hour to winning the game 5-2 was my moment of the week.
And final headline is winning Manchester United. Beating Manchester United 4-2 at home in the first leg of Celtic. They are the favourites for the Champions League. To continue this, I'll just continue into week analysis. The second leg, I only lost 1-0, which puts me through, on aggregate. Crashed them. It was actually the game after the Man U game that it crash dumped, but I just knew the minute it crash dumped that the second Man U result hadn't gone through. And I've tried to play it again twice now, and yeah, not been able to get any result out of it when I've tried to play it again, which is fucking infuriating considering how tense that original result was. So
save and reload.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm doing, because fuck off. I'm now playing as Leverkusen. Leverkusen.
I will carry on this. It's Leverkusen.
I'm now playing as Leverkusen, and I'm unbeaten in the first five games. It's a good little calm down save after the madness that is that crash dump.
I need a calm down save after this.
Yep. Gaz, how's your week been?
Okay, so I feel like I needed a break from the Milan save because I'd rattled through, I think, seven seasons. About seven seasons I'd gone through and was sort of starting to get a bit... It was drying up a bit, and I thought, I don't want to leave Milan and go to a different team, so I'm going to stay, but I'm going to start another save. So I started a save with FC Copenhagen purely for the reason that I'm going on holiday to... Copenhagen in August. I'm going to watch them play AAB. That's not how you pronounce it, but I can't pronounce Danish, and neither can you two, so none of you can correct me.
I'd give it a shot.
So I thought, go on then. How would you pronounce it?
Well, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, never mind. I'm going to see them play, so I thought I'd start a save with them, and it's going pretty well. We're into the quarterfinal of the cup, the Danish Cup. Qualifying for the Champions League didn't go to plan. We got to the playoffs but then lost against Legia Warsaw, which is a shame to not reach the group stage. So we went into the group stage of the Europa League, which hasn't really gone to plan. There's one game left against Fiorentina, who have won all five of their matches, and we have to beat them and hope that Ghent and Celta Vigo draw, otherwise we're out. So it's going to take a lot us to get through. In a way, I hope we don't, because the fixture congestion's really tiring my players out, because obviously they're not the best. So I'd rather keep fresh and win the Superliga than have a couple more matches in the Europa League. The Superliga is going quite well. We've got a couple of games in hand over the teams that are above us, but at the moment AAB are top. They're 5 points ahead of us, but we've got two games in hand. And Nordsjælland are three points ahead, but we've got two games in hand again. We're the only team in the league that have only played 15 matches. Everyone else is pretty much on 17. So if we can win these next two games in hand, then we're at the top. It's been pretty inconsistent so far. We've won eight, drawn five. We've only lost twice, but sometimes we just can't get that result that we really need, which hopefully with if I can work on this possession-based style of play, we can start controlling matches and seeing them out. But that's about all.
Okay, David. Let's go for this this really, really easy pronunciation.
What, Tananisti Jaflora? I've kind of been brushing up on the Estonian because it means goodbye Estonia and Flora. Because I've just left Flora Tallinn. I completed what was sort of a treble because I kind of carried it into the next season. Won the league quite comfortably, though it was a bit shaky because we were dropping some points when we really shouldn't have, and we should have sealed the league a lot sooner because Levadia were trying to catch us. But eventually we won the league by 10 points, thanks to the fantastic free kick by Lazebny. And we also won in the Super Cup, carried into the next season where we beat Inverness 2-0. So yeah, we pretty much won 4 trophies on my tenure at Flora Tallinn. The only downside was we didn't get into the European group stages, which was something I wanted to earmark, but Rosenborg caused us to lose that. We lost 3-1 in the second leg after a goalless draw in the first at home. But yeah, we pretty much had a good spell at Flora Tallinn. I've resigned, but I wanted to make something special of it, so it gave Flora Tallinn a very special signing just before I left the club, and that was signing Jamie Vardy. A 37-year-old Jamie Vardy on $2,200 a week. on a 1-year contract. Yeah, he was a free agent at the time. And he's...
What was your wage budget? How could you afford to pay £2,200 a week?
Our finances were quite decent, actually. I think our wage budget was something like $14,000.
That's a seventh of your wage budget, though.
It is, but it's not my problem now. All I wanted to do was sign Jamie Vardy so he could play in the Super Cup and win the Super Cup for me. But he got a 6.3, so...
You've used a seventh of your wage budget on a 37-year-old whose main strength is his pace.
For one game.
For one game, yes. And we won it, so it doesn't really matter.
You've ruined that club just for one game.
They're financially secure. They have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, but he's going to ask for a new contract.
He's 37. He's not going to want to play in Estonia much longer.
You're giving him $2,500 a week. He will stay for that.
Not my problem.
You dick.
I hope you never get a job again.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, it's kind of hard finding a new job since there's not many good ones around, but who knows? There could be an opportunity to sign for Llandudno.
Where are you looking to go?
I don't really know. I'm thinking maybe either Wales, Armenia, or Luxembourg. I might go back to Malta. Who knows? All I have are some basic leagues loaded. I'm just kind of working up the ladder.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And David, I think you're the only one with weird transfers, cause
yeah, I'm not far enough in.
Well, I mean, I already discussed the Jamie Vardy transfer.
That wasn't weird. That was stupid.
There's a difference.
It was worth it. It was worth it. But yeah, I've kind of just combed through some of the weird signings that have come through. Kelechi Iheanacho went from City to Southampton for £9.5 million. Andrea Poli, I think you might know him, Darren, from AC Milan.
I do know him. He was in my FM15 Celtic squad for a long, long time.
Yeah, he went from AC Milan to Sporting Gijon in Spain and then went to Brighton and Hove Albion.
See, that's a shocker because he's a brilliant ball winner in FM16.
He's still quite good, but Brighton, I think, are in the Championship now, so...
Still, he should be above that level, unless he had a massive, massive injury.
potentially. I've not really checked. A few free transfers. Diego Costa moved to Swansea. Wilfred Bonny went to Charlton. Marco Royce went to Eibar in Spain, which was quite weird. And Henrik Mkhitaryan went from, surprise, surprise, Dortmund to Bayern Munich for 15 million.
Because that never happened.
That would never happen. But he moved then from Bayern to Schalke for 9.5. And then he's now playing for Olympique Marseille in France, who just came second in the league. And last but not least, Nolito went from Celta Vigo to Spurs for 7.5 million. Then went to Randers in Denmark for free. And then he's now at Murcia.
They're not even a good team. Randers aren't even a good team. They're like lower mid-table. Bizarre.
Yeah, he's now at Murcia in Spain. That's pretty much my weird transfer update.
You always seem to have a lot of weird transfers because you're a... is it a pentagon you're doing or a hexagon?
Jacob's Ladder, but I'm kind of tying it in with just winning every trophy from different nations. So I'm kind of just making a proper journeyman save.
Yeah, like, you seem to always have a better weird transfers cause it up. But, excuse me. It is time for Manager Watch. Insert jingle here. And we're just going for Sam and Steve. We're just doing those two.
Both have retired for me, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, I'm booting up FM now.
Sam Allardyce is still at England, and Steve Bruce isn't on my game because I haven't got England loaded.
Terrible.
But Sam Allardyce is at England.
Yeah, well, because I've got an up-to-date database.
That must be one of the most quickest updates I've seen.
Sort it out, SI, update it every couple of hours. Like, I think if you look on there.
I'm well aware, but I just never really use that database.
Yeah,
because it's kind of buggy.
I've never had a problem with it. The last update came out 7 minutes ago.
It's still quite strange. I think it was FM15 I had that update, and it kept crash dumping for me, and I just didn't like it, so I uninstalled it.
Yeah, I've never had a crash dump with it.
That site just pisses me off anyway.
It's a really good site, in fairness.
I really like it.
It's kind of hard to navigate around it. That's my main fault with it. Like, if you're looking for a specific logo pack or something, it's hard not to get directed just at, oh, Mega Pack.
Yeah, but I mean, they're kind of customized in different kind of styles, and I really like that. There's a lot of content being contributed to it. And plus, the stories are very good as well. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
FM Scout is good for stories as well.
I'm not sure if Sam Allardyce is just retiring on me.
Probably.
I think he does usually retire very early in the game.
I'm in 2020, so...
Yeah, yep. He probably has.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Steve Bruce might have done as well.
Nope, he's a manager at Birmingham.
Yeah, that's not a million miles away.
Yeah.
I also found a weird one. Mick McCarthy went back to Ireland as manager for a second time.
Mick McCarthy on my Aston Villa save, well, Aston Villa, AC Milan, same one, replaced me at Villa.
He's unemployed. He was Ipswich manager in 2019.
Well, the reason why, because they lost to San Marino in 2024.
Ouch.
That's shocking.
This is 2024 and they've lost to San Marino.
That's bad. Next, they're going to lose to an amateur team from Gibraltar.
Oh, that's funny. Because Celtic did that.
You also didn't notice that I pronounced Birmingham.
No, I noticed. Don't worry. I just chose to ignore it.
We do have a question sent in this week from Lewis Walsh, which you two will probably have more opinion than me. Who's going to win each English league? Preferably down to the conference. I'm just going to say, I think, man, you're going to win the top league and then leave the rest for you guys to fight over.
Okay, I'll quickly go in. I'm going to sit on the fence for the Premier League. I'm just going to say Manchester. I'm not sure yet which one. And then I think the Championship, Newcastle. League One, Charlton. League Two, I'm not really sure about League Two. Because I haven't.
Well, it's not going to be Portsmouth anyway.
Seen a whole amount. Yeah, I wasn't going to say Portsmouth. League Two, I'm going to say. I can't remember who went down from League One. Did Doncaster go down? Because if they did, I think
yeah, Doncaster went down. So did Colchester, yeah. Crewe, and
Blackpool.
Blackpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Doncaster will win. Will win League Two then. And the conference, I've literally got no idea.
For me, I'm going to stick with my prediction from last week, which was Spurs winning the league, being a dark horse and all that. Newcastle to win the championship quite easily. Peterborough to win League One. Plymouth to win League Two. And Tranmere.
Oh, yeah, Plymouth.
Tranmere are going to win the Conference National. And I will go out on a limb and say that Salford might win the Conference North. I have no idea about the South.
I don't know. I don't think Salford will win it. I think.
Nah, I don't think I win it either. But I honestly have no idea about many of the teams.
Yeah. You've picked them because you know that they're in that league.
Probably because so much money is going to be pumped into them very soon.
Possibly, yeah. Because Giggs hasn't got a job anymore, so spend more time there.
I love the idea that Giggs just sits at home and like writes checks to Salford, knowing that he's got nothing better to do. Just sitting in his box with a big checkbook.
That's funny. Probably does.
The idea of Giggs being unemployed is still beyond me. I think he'd be a great coach or manager somewhere.
I think he'll get into management very soon. Probably at a championship team and then work his way up.
No, I don't think he'll be. I think he'll be low in the championship. I think it'll be sort of like the top half of League One.
That's exactly what I would suggest.
We'll see. And then, we'll see.
That's what I think. Should we move on to the closing discussion?
Yep. I'm just going to make this a bit quick because I'm not feeling good all of a sudden. But for me, the discussion is how do we go about creating a tactic or a philosophy on FM? For me, I'll kind of sit for a wee 2 minutes. Look at my players, see if they fit into my first instinct, and then if not, I'll base it in the players, but usually I've got an idea going in, what I'd like to do. Like, you guys were talking about how it's weird I'm playing two box-to-box midfielders, but part of the idea that I had going into Leverkusen was a target man, box-to-box, and control football. That's all I wanted to do. And then it's just all lined up like that, as the two box-to-boxes and attacking midfielder. The diamond with overlap. And it's worked well so far.
See, I kind of play my 4-4-2 diamond kind of differently. I play with a deep-line playmaker and just a normal central midfielder, but I'm playing a little bit more. It's not as complicated as you would find in the Bundesliga, because I'm playing in quite lower leagues. But if you're going about creating a tactic or philosophy, I'd say the best thing to start off with is your midfield. You kind of just picture and visualize what you want to get out of your midfield. Do you want to exploit the flanks? Do you want to play the overlap? Do you want to, you know, play out of defense or something like that? Really depends on what kind of philosophy you want to adapt to your team, and it also depends on the players you have at your disposal.
See, it's interesting that you say start in the midfield. I actually start with the strikers, because I find that it's all but your whole team is going to be built around scoring more goals than the opponent. So
that's interesting, because when I haven't built many tactics, I admit that most of the time I've pretty much downloaded them and then tweaked them slightly to suit my team. But for AC Milan, I wanted to build my own tactic, and I'm trying to do the same now for Copenhagen. The way I've started and the way I've looked at it is, if I can keep the ball, And if I can not concede goals, then I'm not going to lose the match. All I need to do is score one, and then we get 3 points. So I generally try and have a stronger defensive outlook than a stronger attacking outlook.
Well, usually for me, you definitely need at least three tactics. And I would recommend starting with either one of them being wide and one of them being narrow. And then the third could be absolutely anything, like just a standard 4-4-2 perhaps. Kind of just so you don't, you know, just chop and change altogether. Like if your tactic isn't working, then perhaps you could go wider if you want to maybe go a bit narrow. Or just stick just to the very basics and keep your instructions set to minimal. Because usually what I do is play three instructions maximum when I'm playing.
What instructions are you playing?
I would usually go for a higher tempo, sit slightly deeper, and pass into space. Pass into space usually works well if you have very pacey players. And the good thing about playing narrow is you can use your left and right backs as wing backs, and they will fill in that space where there's nobody there.
Yep.
And it kind of works well when you have that.
Very similar to what I do, in that I've got a smallest pitch I can at home. I'm playing the diamond narrow, and I've got the overlap on. So everyone is kind of pushing past my attack midfield centre when we're in the final third.
Like it would also work well with a 4-2-3-1 wide. And even just having the wing backs fill in that extra bit of space and then feed it onto your wingers or inside forwards, whatever you want to call them. But I think it lies with the core of your midfield and how your tactic is going to be based.
And I think the two box-to-boxes are keeping the players involved in every stage of my play. And because I'm controlling the game, it allows them to kind of be where they need to be.
I would need at least one playmaker in my midfield.
That's what I'm saying. I've got him as the attacking midfield centre. And he is the linchpin. Everything, once the ball gets to him, that's where the...
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes I would just do it from, you know, you're just central midfield and then possibly leave your attacking midfielder as a shadow striker just to add a little bit more firepower.
But see, that's the thing. A lot of my goals are coming from Bender and Kempo. They are getting involved in every stage of the play. That's what I love about this tactic.
Hearing Lars Bender as a goal scorer is perhaps potentially one of the weirdest things I've heard in my life.
Yeah, he's got 4 goals in the first 5 games.
That's weird. I think he might have scored that many all last season.
I mean, look at the screenshot.
Yeah, that's so weird.
3 in the first 5. My bad. And he's got one assist in the Champions League, and he's always dribbling and key passes. He's involved in everything. But because he's naturally defensive, he's always winning the battle of the centre midfield.
But see, nice. You can play any kind of combination in midfield. It's the most interesting part of a tactic.
Yep. If I had to put my finger on it, it's that 19 work rate and that 20 natural fitness that makes him fantastic as a box-to-box.
See, sometimes my strikers just don't seem to get involved when there's, you know, no midfield influence. So you kind of need that midfield to be the core of your team and then focus on your strikers at the end.
But you're not playing a target man, are you?
Sometimes I switch between a target man and an advanced forward, depending on the player.
See, I like having a target man partnered with something if I'm going to do a target man.
Yeah, I wouldn't play a target man without a partner there, personally.
Yeah, I go with a defensive forward and a target man. But you need some kind of playmaker to get involved in that. That's why I use the deep line playmaker. Shoot the balls in from deep and then get the target man getting the header on the ball.
Yeah, Darren, last season, Lars Bender scored 2 goals in the season.
I'm turning his career into something new. He's going to be my Frank Lampard. Sorry, I should have pronounced that right. Frank Lampard. Lampard.
It's pretty hard to mispronounce that name.
Exactly, I'm trying to mispronounce it and I keep struggling.
it just makes you sound ridiculous, to be honest.
When do I ever not sound ridiculous?
When you're pronouncing names correctly.
That's the biggest insult I've ever heard, thank you very much.
Breaking news, Joe Allen has just moved to Stoke City.
I thought you were going to say Celtic.
No.
Damn it.
No.
Another Manchester United target goes elsewhere. Oh, no.
That's a really good signing for Stoke.
I think it is.
It's kind of the same as Charlie Adam moving from Liverpool to Stoke.
I also think that's a good starting point. And the text confirms it. The font is psychic. Anyway, does anyone have any plugs, David? I know you've got your story.
Well, I have my Facebook page, facebook.com/DBSC16. We've just surpassed 450 likes. And I also have my story on Sorted Out SI, which you can find under the name Climbing Jacob's Ladder.
Nice. And I will, just because David's obviously forgotten, plug the Twitter account.
Yeah, I forgot the Twitter account. You can find us on Twitter at Center Circle Pod. Leave us any questions, leave us any feedback. And yeah, that's pretty much it. We've got a nice few messages coming through. We asked you who was going to be the next England manager. Who would you select? Simon Sarico said he wanted Alan Stubbs to be the new England manager.
Alan Stubbs is a good manager, but I wouldn't recommend him to be an England manager. Anyway, Gazza, your plugs?
Nope, that was it.
Okay, for me, you've got me on Twitter at Darren_Carrigan. You can also get me on YouTube at Darren Carrigan. Can email me at scottishwolf@hotmail.co.uk. And just to throw in a little thing that I might be involved in, The Football Pink is a football magazine, and really it goes around each country every, I think it's 2 months. The issue 13 is coming out in August, and I might be involved in that, so keep an eye out for the Scotland issue. And that's The Football Pink. I think you can find them online, just Google them. I've got them on Twitter.
Footballpink.net.
Yep, thank you. And I think that's our show for tonight. Thank you for joining us. We have been the slightly more energetic than average group, and joining me has been Gareth.
It's been a pleasure.
And David.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. I'm not afraid to
machine.